Golovsky Be'ez Hashem is going to speak on, he's going to give a shiur on Friday night after the Suda, before the Tish. It'll be like a shiur, and then you'll have the Tish. And then Rabbi Sabalovsky is going to give a shiur on Shabbos morning, again. And then Rabbi Levin is going to do Shalosh Shudas. And then Rabbi Levin is going to give a shiur Sunday morning on some Basar B'Chalav related Indian on Sunday morning, meaning in place of me. I'm not going to give a shiur Sunday morning. He's going to give Ian shiur Sunday morning. So that's some very exciting stuff going on here at Camp Gaby. Okay. What else? Any other? Oh, also tonight again, do not wait for me for Marav. I'm going to be in Camp Hask tonight. So I trust that they'll daven Marav there. So don't wait for me for Marav. Anything else? Tonight's night shiur will be cut a little bit short because of that. Okay, because I got to get over to Hask, and I think that's it for now. But let's learn a little bit. So we left off yesterday in the Shar HaRatzon. I just my throat's not fully, my voice not fully there right now, I'm gonna try my best here. We left off in the Shar HaRatzon. We're up to Le'inyan HaKlalos. We were like mamash right in the middle of the paragraph. Le'inyan HaKlalos. When it comes to the curses in the Torah, the Tochacha Nemar V'Haya Imlo Sishma B'Kol Hashem Orkech L'Shmo La'Asos Es Kol Mitzvos V'Chitos V'Shar Nochim Tzav Kayom Uva Alecha Kol HaKlalos Eile V'Sigucha. That if a person is not Shomea, and again here we have that key word Shomea. If a person is not Shomea to what Hashem says, so then all of these klalos are going to happen. Uksiv es habracha asher tishmu el mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem vaklala im lo tishmu el mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem. Each time we're given the choice of v'charta v'chayim, we're given the choice of choosing the right path or choosing the wrong path. It's not just you will do. You'll do good, you will do bad, but you'll be shomea, you'll derher. You're going to hear and make it a part of you. It's not so much about what a person has done, it's what a person becomes. Now, obviously, what we become very often is a function of what we do, but where we're ultimately judged is what we've become. And when we do enough wrong, we become that, the Avera. We allow the Avera to become part of our nature and part of our essence, and when we do enough mitzvahs, that kedusha of that mitzvah becomes part of our essence. But our goal is always to become, to allow something to penetrate into our neshamos, and to allow the right things to penetrate into our neshamos, and not allow the wrong things. Meaning, there is even a notion of people who do averos, two people who do the same avera, and for one person it's much worse than for the other person, not only just based on their madrega and what's expected of them, but with how much energy did they do the avera, with how much excitement did they do the avera. The psukim in this week's parasha tell us about kashering kalim. So the principle in kashering is kibolo kachpolto. Right? The same way that something absorbs, so too releases whatever time. So if something absorbs tam through direct fire, the only way to kasher it is with direct fire. So the Balei Musar understand that the same is true when it comes to averos. If a person absorbed an avera, he did an avera with a certain amount of energy, passion, excitement, vigor. I don't know, looking at thesaurus for more words that mean the same thing. So when he does tshuva, he also has to do it with that same energy, passion, vigor, because so when you have that kind of energy, it really becomes part of you. So you need to do tshuva in a way that reflects that, as opposed to a person just doing avera with, in a moment, the Yetzer Hara got the best of him. So the tshuva does not have to be as intense a process, because it didn't really become absorbed in his being. He wasn't shomea the avera. He just did the avera. So that's the notion of being shomea. Being shomea means that a person allows something to penetrate into who he is. This is part of the notion of doing, part of the idea of doing tshuva properly is to be able to let go, to be able to disassociate ourselves from our averos. And it's hard to do that when one has defined themselves by their avera. Meaning there's a big difference between someone saying, I spoke Lashon Hara, and saying, I am a Baal Lashon Hara. know, like there's a big difference between someone doing an Avera and someone defining themselves by an Avera. When you define yourselves by your Avera, it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult to leave it. And then the same is true with negative experiences. You know, if a person has something that's an experience that's just been harmful to them, even if it's no fault of their own, even if they did nothing wrong, if they allow that to define themselves, then very often they have a hard time moving on. They have a hard time living a productive life. That a person has to figure out how to remove himself from becoming the worst thing that ever happened to him. I read the book recently, The Choice, and that's, you know, the yisod of, one of the yisodos of the book is that you don't allow the worst thing that ever happened to you to define everything that you are. And I was having a hard time understanding this concept. You know, this woman describes how it's important that a person forgives. And I'm like, forgives? What, you're forgiving Hitler? How dare you? You know, she's a survivor, so you can't talk to a survivor this way, but you can when you're just reading the book and she's not there. I'm like, how dare you forgive Hitler? Like, well, what are you talking? And then it became clearer through the book that she didn't mean to forgive Hitler. God forbid, no way. No, what she meant is that it was bad enough what he did to her during those years in the early 1940s. But to allow him to continue to haunt her through the rest of her life and affect the way she relates to her husband and to her children and to her grandchildren and to other people and to constantly be a source of trauma and make her an unsettled person, that just allows him, you have to remove yourself from that. She said that was the avoda of her life, was to not live her entire life as a victim, to sort of move on from that. It's part of the tshuva process also, to not define ourselves by our averus, and also outside of tshuva, to not define ourselves by the worst things that ever happened to us. Sometimes things happen to us and they're not really in our control, but it is in our control how to live after that, how to move on from that. It's a remarkable story, I'm sure many of you have heard. I just mentioned this in Smichas Chavrusha last night. Rav Eliyadah Goldwicht told the story that it was one of those Rabbi Yoel Gold stories. You know those stories that he has the videos about? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Okay, so one of those Rabbi Yoel Gold stories. But it's a true story, and I just got an email today from the guy that it happened to, because I mentioned him in the Smichas Chavrusha last night, and I forgot he's in the Smichas Chavrusha. So the story was with Rebbetzin Yocheved Goldberg, at that time Yocheved Bruckstein, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg's wife. So when she was a little girl, she was in camp for the summer. The last time in the Smichas Chavrusha, I said she was in Camp Marasha, because that's what I assumed, because I know she went to camp with my sister, and my sister went to Camp Marasha, but our father told me, no, this was when she was in Camp Chedva. I don't know how she made it from Chedva to Marasha, but whatever. So when she was in Camp Chedva, her parents and her grandparents came to visit on visiting day. They came to visit on a visiting day. So her father, Dr. Bruckstein, is walking with her grandfather down the road in the camp, and there's an older gentleman that's walking in the other direction, and her grandfather nods at the fellow, and the fellow nods back, and they walk past each other. So Dr. Bruckstein says to his father, "Who was that guy?" And he said, "Oh, that guy, he was my best friend before the Holocaust. We grew up together in the same town. He was my best friend." He said, "Your best? How come I never met him before? How come you didn't go over and give him a hug? How come your best friend? What are you talking about?" So he said, "I'll let it go." He said, "I'm not gonna let it go. Your best friend growing up? You got to tell me about it." He said, "Well, I never told you this, but before the war, I had said, you know, I was married and had a child before the war, and I lost them during the Holocaust, and then, you know, we got remarried and built a family. But before the war, we had heard that that the Nazis were making progress toward where we lived, and they were going to, it was going to be bad news for us." And he said, "I managed to secure visas to get out, to get to America. And I told my very best friend that, you know, we were talking to each other about what we're going to do about the impending doom." And he said, "I told my very best friend in the whole world what the plan was, that I have these visas, and he's the only person I told about, and he's the only person I told where I hid them." And the next day I went to find them, and it was visas for me, my wife, my son, my parents, my in-laws, we were all going to get out. And the next day I went to find them and they were gone. And that guy, who had no plans, miraculously disappeared. He managed to escape. And everyone in my family died. I was the only survivor. So we're not such good friends anymore. So he said, oh my gosh, and that's, how do you not go over and like strangle him or like beat him over the head with a baseball bat or something? I mean, this guy is, you have to let it go. It was a different time. It was, people were facing different kinds of challenges. You have to live your life. You have to let things go. I don't know how a person has the kochos hanefesh to let something like that go, but he can make the worst thing that ever happened to him define him, and then he wouldn't have had the capacity to get remarried, have this amazing family, and you know, look what it's produced. I mean, look at, and if, I mean, you all know Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. I mean, I don't know if you know him personally, but you know, he's one of the biggest rabbanim in America, one of the most important influencers in the Torah world in America today. I mean, look what it produced. So that's you know, this idea that a person can't allow themselves to be defined, but when you're shomea a klala, when you're shomea an avera, so shomea means that it becomes a part of you. You allow it to become a part of you, and you allow it to define you. By many mechanchim, by many gedolei mechanchim, one of their first order of business is to make sure that the Talmidim don't define themselves by their failures. If you read the book on Rabbi David Trank, you know that like that was his avoda. Like, it's not you aren't your mistakes. You're a holy person. You're going to be great. You're a yeshiva bacher. You just haven't yet figured out how to do it the right way yet, you know, or how to thrive as a yeshiva bacher. But that's what you are. That's what you are at your essence. And once you're able to internalize that, so then the rest is just commentary, you know, that to actually believe that. So he continues over here. Where are we? Uksivas habracha shatishman l'tzara klalim lo tishman l'tzara shem l'kechem. V'kola shmios halalu, all these shmios, ein perushan shmias ha'ozen b'vad. It doesn't just mean hearing something. It doesn't just mean like, oh, my audio receptors are in tip-top shape. That's not what shmia means, that I'm able to hear, that I passed the test in school when they, you know, raise your right hand, your left hand, or whatever, you know, when you're hearing the beeps. That's not what it means. Achratzalomer, she's ratulasos. It means ratzum. It means that it becomes a part of you, that you want, that your desire to do it, it fits. We find that with Yaakov Avinu, it was against his nature to do what he did in order to get those brachos, but he was shomea to his mother, not begrudgingly. He allowed it to become something that he did, and he did it convincingly enough. And therefore, he was zocha to the brachos. And he was shomea to his parents in terms of choosing a wife. And look at the results of that. He could have said, "I don't want to leave home. I don't want to travel to some evil uncle that I never met before. I'd rather stay here and I'll find a wife here." But his parents were able to have this vision. They were able to see the bigger picture, that he's destined for bigger things, and he's going to need a partner that's an appropriate partner to do that with, and it's going to be painful for them as it's painful for him to say goodbye to him, but it's something that that he has to do. So, you know, there were very, very few people, let's say 70 years ago or pre-Holocaust, let's say, in America who went to learn in yeshivas in Europe, but there were a few. There were some people that, and their mothers would put them on a boat, and who knows, maybe I'll see you in 4 years. You know, I'll send a telegram or something. I don't know how they communicated, a carrier pigeon or something. I don't know, right? And maybe we'll hear from you. And can you imagine the Mesiras Nefesh of something like that? But they had a certain vision. And, you know, that's how people like Rav Gifter became Rav Gifter, because he was just a boy growing up in Connecticut or wherever. No, in Virginia, I think. Yeah. Virginia, okay. There's a boy growing up in Virginia. When he applied to MTA, when Rav Gifter applied to MTA, they put him in the lowest shir. And he overheard the menahel talking to someone else. "Why did you put him in that shir?" He said, "Because there's nothing lower than it. The guy doesn't know anything." And he became Rav Gifter, because at a certain point, he started to learn, and his mother was willing to send him to Meir. to send him to Telz, to send him to Europe. Let him go learn. And that's a tremendous mission, but it requires a vision. And to have a child like Yaakov Avinu who's shomea that vision. Shomea not just hears it, but he buys into that vision and he sees that he can become something and that he just needs to choose wisely in terms of wife. You know, and this is particularly interesting that's the example we give of a shomea, because the halacha is that if a person doesn't want to marry somebody or wants to marry somebody and his parents don't want him to marry that person, what's the halacha? That's one of the exceptions to kibud av aim. You don't have to listen to your parents. If you fall in love and you want to marry somebody and your parents say, no, don't marry that person, you don't have to listen to your parents. And yet still, that's the example of Shomea. Well, what's the message of that? I think the part of the message of that is that it's true. La halacha, you don't have to listen to them. There's no doubting that halacha. But if you don't think for a second, well, wait a second, maybe it should give you some pause. Why are my parents saying that I shouldn't marry this person? What are they seeing that I'm not seeing? Meaning that obviously they love me, obviously they're interested in what's best for me. But what did life experience tell them that maybe I'm not seeing? And you know what? Sometimes I've been involved in many of these cases where a guy, finds a girlfriend in high school or whatever, and he wants to marry her, and the parents are like, whoa, this girl is totally inappropriate for our son or whatever. And sometimes the answer is he should marry her, but at least to think about, what's their perspective. So if they're being idiotic, they're just saying something stupid like, oh no, we always imagined you marrying someone who's, who's 5'9", not 5'7", something that doesn't matter, whatever. So that's like idiotic, right? But if they're saying something that has value, to listen to it, to at least be aware, to make a more educated decision. So it's Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu chose his wife based on his parents' advice, because he was Shomea. He was Shomea to what his parents, obviously not everyone's parents, Yitzchak and Rivka, but he was Shomea to what his parents had to say. I was once talking to, I don't know if I could say this story, but I don't think anyone really listens to the Orchid Siddiqui Shir anyway, so I could probably say it. So I was once talking to Mori Rabbi Rav Willig, and there was a particular person who was causing, I'm going to be very vague over here, there was a particular person who is a contemporary of mine that was causing some trouble in Klal Yisrael, let's put it that way. And I remember the guy from yeshiva, and the guy was a good guy in yeshiva, like a real ben Torah in yeshiva. Why is he causing all this trouble? And Rabbi Willig said to me, Arya, you know the difference between you and him? And I said, he's causing all this trouble. He said, you married the right person. The guy's wife was a troublemaker, so he became a troublemaker. And that has an influence on a person, right? Who they associate with has an influence on a person. Happens to be he maybe got divorced. He married the wrong person. I was just, I don't know what Rabbi Willig knew at the time or didn't know. But that was just wow. So, okay. Uksiv, v'shomeli yishkan betach v'shadim mipachad rav. Arba shmios hein. There are four types of being shomeo. Oh, it's already... Wow, okay. All right, we finish this paragraph. Ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with the Arba Shmiel, saying the four types of...
The woman with she first married a Tom Chacham and she put the thorn on. Maybe it was not.
Right. Exactly. Why is this not stopping? Pleasure.
Oh, we flew through it.
Johnny, you want the whole story?
Well, sure.